This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game that's on the way back. A college World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
You know, Tommy likes this song when he turns it up and tries to jam out over there as he's... Which Tommy doesn't jam out.
No, not real well.
You're not real jam. You're not a jamming type. I don't see Tommy driving down the road blaring music Buick. trying to...
My Buick's very comfortable.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm sure the sound system's great.
Heated seats. Heated steering wheel. It's awesome.
I mean, nothing but luxury. Nothing but the best for Tommy Kraft.
Listening to little James Taylor.
Listening to James Taylor.
Hey, over the weekend... We got an Alexa. At the Christmas party, we got a Google Home Hub. I thought, man, this is wonderful. My wife started doing some research. Yeah. Laura was looking this up. She said, you know, I think I'd rather have the Google Alexa. The Alexa Plus deal, or Alexa. So I took it down to the Best Buy, swapped it in. And one of the two cool things about the Alexa, say, hey, Alexa,
do this.
Play James Taylor. Or Zach Brown, or George Strait, or whatever I'm in the mood for.
Kanye West.
Or Alexa, play ESPN Arkansas. Like last night, I was listening to Musselman Live in the car. It's time to go in the house. Wanted to listen, because he was telling a really good story. Wanted to hear the end of it. Hey, Alexa, play ESPN Arkansas. Boom, there it was.
Pretty cool. How about that?
Yeah.
All you got to do is say, play ESPN Arkansas.
If you got an Alexa... Hey, Alexa. I'm messing everyone's Alexa up.
I know.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN Arkansas.
And it plays it.
How
about that? Maddie, don't you have one of these too?
I've been on the Alexa bandwagon for many years. I've even got the little plug, you know, and so you can say, Alexa, turn on the lights, you know.
Some of those yesterday in the mail. We hadn't figured out how to use them yet. You may have to come show us.
They can be a little bit complicated depending on your setup. But yeah, I had wondered. So we can do that. You say, Alexa, play ESPN Arkansas. Yep. And it'll tune you right into us.
Right.
That's pretty convenient.
I've got the one by my bed. It's got a video screen. It's like Echo Show, I think. Yep. I got that for Christmas.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And it's
the
like
big one or the little one?
I think it's the little one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when you set the alarm like 10 minutes before your alarm goes off, the light starts. So it's by the time, you know, your alarm is about to sound, it's a full bright light, you know.
Hey.
Pretty cool.
So highfalutin. I guess I'm behind the game here because I don't have one.
Well, what they do.
I'm telling you.
I do is yell at Rowdy in my
It's a
apartment.
Game changer,
but
man.
They have low price points. So what they do is they kind of sneak their way into your home. And the next thing you know, your home is basically run by Amazon.
Pretty much.
So they're completely in my life now.
You can get one of the Echo Dots for like 30 bucks.
I may have an extra one.
35 bucks.
Oh, hey, thanks. Yeah. I don't know what I'd do with it. I mean. Listen.
You try to get her to, you know, you ask her dirty things and see, you know, where her line is. You know, hey, Alexa, speak, you know.
This, that, and the other.
He's like, all right. She's like, that's too far.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing is, like, I don't know. Like, I enjoy technology and I think it's fantastic. But, man, as time goes on, we are just getting lazier and lazier. Where now we're getting to, like, all it's going to be, like, in, you know, probably 30 years is we're just going to go, and something's going to happen.
I know.
Like we're just going to have to make a groan, and all the lights will come on in our house. You know, it's incredible.
Well, I'd say that's exactly what I told Laura, because the kids are now, hey, Alexa, this, hey, Alexa, you know, hey, Alexa, bring me a Coke Zero, you know, basically.
Yeah.
They think Alexa can do everything for them. So I said, we are breeding laziness in this house. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, as far as ordering, it's like I order my dog food on it, you know, and she'll send you a reminder. It's like, the little, you know, yellow lights blink and you're like, and she's like, hey, just a reminder, this time last month you bought dog food. You want to order it again?
That's crazy.
Yeah. So Brad in Mountain Home just texted in and said, Google does the same thing. So if you have a Google Hub, just say, hey, Google, play ESPN Arkansas. So if you're wanting to listen to the show, you got one of these speakers in your home, one of these smart speakers, you can listen to the dumb guys on the smart speaker.
Yeah, either say, play ESPN Arkansas or show me Tommy Kraft.
There you go.
One of the two will probably get you something.
We're truly worldwide.
Yeah, I mean, hey, listen, we're worldwide. We're highfalutin here on the Morning
Rush. We can't spell falutin, but we are it.
But it sure sounds good. So, yeah, there you have it, trying to help everybody out with the technology.
Alexa, how do you spell falutin?
Yeah, and she could probably tell you. She could probably do it all for you if that's the case. So, if you want to get on the conversation, call or text into the Morning Rush at 877-377-6963. We were talking about this coaching staff that pretty much is official, and it has been made complete by Sam Pittman, and kind of just go through it all for all of you as far as the names. Well, not only do we have the names, we have the salaries, because I think that that's fascinating, because I want to know what other people are making. You know, it's always that question that's impolite to ask, but you're always curious when you meet somebody. You're like, how much money do you make after taxes at your job? And no one's going to tell you because it's rude. But luckily, with the Freedom of Information Act and dealing with the fact that it is a public university, we have those numbers in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
So to give everybody a breakdown of what some of the coaches are making at Arkansas, we'll start with the most highest paid coach, which, of course, is Barry Odom, the defensive coordinator. He's making $1.2 million. Yep. Kendall Briles, the offensive coordinator, is making right at $1 million. So both coordinators are making over a million.
I believe exactly to the penny what John Chavis was making. So no change there. The only thing you got to remember, and this is just budgetary reasons, doesn't affect anything, is if Chavis doesn't work again, you still owe him 1 year of salary based on his contract.
Correct, which I don't think he will be working again. So odds are you're probably going to be doing that. That's
going to pan out or not.
Now, this is what I am fascinated by. The third highest paid coach is Brad Davis, the offensive line coach.
Mm-hmm. Why does that fascinate you?
Because I would have felt like Sam Pittman would be more in charge of that and helping out with that a little more,
mm-hmm.
to where you wouldn't have to pay an offensive line coach, or at least make him the third highest paid coach, because you'd have Sam Pittman there helping out too. It's like a mm-hmm. double dip, if you will. Now, I'm not questioning Sam Pittman. I'm sure he has a reason behind it. I was just surprised to see the third highest paid coach be Brad Davis.
Well, you got a good... We talked about earlier why you asked me what my grades were on this staff, and I said A-minus because you had SEC experience mm-hmm. in on both sides of the ball at line play. And Brad Davis coached at Missouri most recently, had been at Florida, and he's got a lot of Power 5 experience. His ability to do it the way Sam Pittman wants it done means Sam Pittman can go focus on some other things. And when Sam was with us on the show a couple of weeks ago, he said, hey, I'm going to have my hands on a little bit of everything. You know, not just, you know, be out there coaching offensive line. He said, I want to let my coaches coach. So, listen, the most important hire any coach makes beyond the coordinators is the offensive line coach.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, I am not disagreeing.
So you can't skimp there.
I'm not questioning. I just thought it was interesting that was the third highest paid coach on staff.
And that's why Derek LeBlanc, did I say that right?
Yep.
LeBlanc. The C is silent.
C is silent.
LeBlanc. Derek LeBlanc, who coached at Kentucky. And from
did
what,
a really good job there, too.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky's defensive line last year was just nasty.
Mm-hmm. Big old boys up front.
And, you know, they were as good as anybody in this league.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were right there with Auburn as far as defensive line. Now, was there the rest of their defense? Was the rest of their team? No, but... they had a heck of a year. And I'm telling you, that's a big loss for Kentucky for him to come to Arkansas.
When Arkansas played Kentucky, what was the thing we kept talking about in that matchup is going to be this offensive line of Arkansas trying to go up against that defensive line, which is just monsters up front. So, you can't argue that one.
That's why, you know, you look at where you're putting your money on your staff. It's the guys that have SEC experience, Brad Davis, Derek LeBlanc, offensive, defensive line coaches. That's where I want to invest in the most experienced coaches, and that's what Sam Pittman's done here. You build a team from the inside out. Well, that's kind of what he's done with his staff. I've started there, and I've spent my money in the spots where we need the most help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it to me, making those moves, especially mm-hmm. for Derek LeBlanc, I mean, that's one of those hires where I'm like, nice, that's as good as it gets right there. I mean, or at least one that you can be excited about.
Yep.
Now, here's also another fascinating one, is Scott Fountain, who's been moved over as a special teams coordinator, quote-unquote, if you will. I'm sure there's going to be other duties involved. But he's making the same amount as Derek LeBlanc at $450,000 a year. Now, that's another fascinating one. Because if you look at what Scott Fountain has done, obviously coming from Georgia, he's got a lot of special teams experience. And again, there's going to be other things involved with this.
Yep.
But it's also interesting that he's making that much money.
Yeah. And like you said, came from Georgia, had a kicker last year that won the Lou Groza Award. So guy has experience immediately in this area on the team. Where's Arkansas? Not been very good the last few years.
Special teams.
And where can games turn on a dime?
Special teams.
I mean, you're just huge field position battles there.
I remember I'd always get so much crap when I would say that it concerns me when you don't have a special teams coach. It's like,
well,
I'm not saying that this is automatically going to make the special teams be amazing, but it just seemed like if you're struggling at special teams like Arkansas did under Brett Bielema and Chad Morris as much as you were, then maybe that's something you look into is all my whole point. Yeah. Because the only redeeming quality they had on special teams the past 8 or 9 years, basically since Bobby Petrino left, the only redeeming quality is they had Toby Baker at punter.
Yeah,
that was really it.
Before he was at Georgia, he spent 8 years at Auburn.
Another SEC school. How about that?
Four of them not on the field, four of those coaching tight ends and special teams.
Fine.
So you got a guy, and another reason you're paying this guy is he can get better. He can probably get work around the SEC at or near this amount of money. So, I mean, you got to pay people what they're worth. Well, tells me Sam Pittman knows what this guy's worth.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm not going to be questioning any of it because this is the decisions that Sam Pittman and the U of A want to make, and these are the staff that you assembled, which we know, as we talked about, is a solid staff. Then next on the list is Justin Stepp, the wide receivers coach, being retained from the Chad Morris staff. He's making $400,000 a year. So he's back. I know that of all the assistant coaches that most people wanted to keep or was at least said that being sense to retain, I think Barry Lunning was one of those guys. But the other one being Justin Stepp because of the way he recruited some of these wide receivers and the guys that have come in. And also, knock on wood, none of the wide receivers, at least the big-time ones, have decided to transfer out. I'm not saying that's just because of Justin Stepp, but Treylon Burks and Trey Knox are big-time playmaking wide receivers.
If they didn't want to play for Justin Stepp, they would have left.
Yes, that's a good point.
When he was retained. Perhaps they voiced the opinion of, we would probably be more inclined to stay if this coach stayed.
Yeah.
I don't know that, but, you know, that's very a real possibility as well.
I have no problem with Justin Stepp being the wide receiver.
Do you know, because I don't know. It's $400,000. What he was making, is that a raise for him? I don't think it's a decrease, but.
I'd have to double check and look back.
I don't know if he's making $350,000, $400,000 last year.
I don't think he's
making less, but.
I mean, it might be a slight increase. I would think it'd be an increase there, so. But he's making $400,000. Then next is the tight end coach in John Cooper, making $300,000 a year, which, again, as a tight end coach, he's stepping right in. I'm going to be curious about how he handles Hudson Henry, because Hudson Henry was the number one player in the state of Arkansas, had a scholarship to anywhere he wanted to go in the country. He came to Arkansas, really didn't see the field much last year. And again, it's going to be tough to look back and say, all right, was this more of him just not being to that level yet, or was it more of the ineptitude of the coaching staff not putting him in a position? Don't know. But at least he's going to be stepping onto the field. I'm talking about John Cooper and having a tight end who has massive potential.
And, you know, another guy on your staff that also played in the NFL, so he's got some NFL playing experience too.
Yeah. I mean, and being from Oklahoma and having that experience, I mean, he seems like he's very impressive as far as the resume goes. Now, next is the running back coach in Jimmy Smith, making $225,000 a year. Now, this one's also interesting to me because running backs, as we know, in the skill position are extremely important. We know that Arkansas, even in their darkest of days, have always had a strong running back in the backfield. I mean, the past 2 years, you've had Rakeem Boyd, and Rakeem Boyd is a stud. He is a SEC, all SEC caliber running back. So, you've been blessed to at least have, even in the darkest times, a running back. And with Rakeem Boyd coming back, Jimmy Smith's going to be able to work with him. I know that Monty Spivey's in that mix as well. So, you know, we never know what he'll be able to add into it. So you got some running backs. And, of course, the transfer from Arizona State, I always forget his name, but I know he's coming in as well. So you got some depth there. You got some things to work on. But Jimmy Smith, he's really the one wild card, if you will, because coming from Georgia State, he doesn't have a lot of SEC experience, no SEC experience, actually. You know, he's kind of an unknown guy, but I'm wondering if Sam Pittman maybe decided to bring him on for his recruiting purposes. Maybe he's somebody that really knows the Georgia area well, if they want to get in recruiting there. I mean, that's the key.
This is a guy that until just recently was coaching high school football, which that doesn't scare me, but it's the reason you can pay him $225,000. He's been coaching
I'd pay
high school football. I mean,
I'd like to make $225,000.
Me too. I mean, you know, sign me up.
Yeah.
You
know, and I'm sure that if he does a really good job,
I could take the pay cut to do this.
Yeah. I mean, $200,000. I mean, if I needed to do that for that, yeah, you would take a pay cut.
I would trim the budget somewhere.
What a guy.
I'd cut back on the Alexas or something. You know, but yeah.
What a guy. That just makes you great. And then the final coach, of course, is the cornerback coach.
Hey, Alexa, save me some money.
Sam Carter. He's also making $225,000. Now, just to go into that, what I think is interesting.
You have Ryan Rhodes, too?
Oh, yeah, Ryan Rhodes. We're
missing one here.
Missing one there. Yeah, I need to go and get that real quick. But to go on to Sam Carter, though, he is a guy that where it's not – he's just doing cornerbacks. Which makes me wonder, is it going to be a Barry Odom thing where he does safeties? Like, is that going to be also? Yeah. Somebody's got to coach safeties, right?
Yeah, and that wouldn't. I was talking about this with Clay on the other day off the air about, you know, kind of where everybody was going to coach before all these pieces were put into place. And he just said, you know, Rob Smith didn't really coach position. He kind of had a hand in everything when he was at Arkansas. But this is before everything was in place about a week ago. I would imagine Odom will end up being with the safeties because, like I said, you got a linebackers coach and you've kind of got someone at every level lined up. You got your D-line handled, so you got your linebackers handled. So I would imagine that's where Odom's going to end up working.
Yeah, and by the way, also at $225,000 is Ryan Rhodes.
Right.
So you have three coaches at $225,000 and two of them being defensive coaches, one being running backs.
I promise he was making nowhere near that in JUCO football.
Yeah, I would probably make that assumption. Yeah. So
those guys that are making the lower salaries on this staff compared to where they were 2 to 3 years ago are ecstatic to be making that.
Yeah. I mean, it's
to come from JUCO football a year or so removed from high school football to be making $225,000 is a great way to get a foot in the door and to be at a Power 5, particularly SEC level. It's why it's structured the way it is amongst this staff.
Yeah, and even what Sam Pittman, I'm sure, is looking at these three guys that are making 225s, you just look at them, they're more of those, I'm just assuming, but they're more of those guys that I think Sam Pittman probably looked at and said, younger guys, up-and-coming guys, guys who have experience in certain areas, maybe have connections in certain areas. It's not because of their just amazing prowess as particular position coaches, which, again, not saying that they may not be well, but to make these hires and depending on what you're paying them and where they're coming from, I'm sure that you got a lot more involved than just saying, they're going to be great position coaches.
Well, part of why you have to have three position coaches making $225,000, which is on the lower end, is because you're paying two coordinators seven figures.
Yep.
And Arkansas's got a staff budget of $5 million. I think they busted that just a little bit.
$5.025 million.
Yeah, so just went over a hair. But
I don't know how they're going to be able to handle that.
It's $25,000, the women's swimming team or something. Somebody's losing something.
Yeah. Going to be looking around seeing, because you can't be paying certain other coaches if you've got to make sure that extra $25,000 is in there.
You know, this is the most Arkansas has ever paid coordinators combined, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not even close.
Chavis was close. The first million-dollar coordinator, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. He was making 1.2, right? Yeah. It's last year.
And Craddock.
God, you talk about the most overpaid coach ever.
My goodness. Yeah, he was making too much money. Everybody was making too much money last year.
He was making, what, $750,000?
Think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Whew. Stolen money right there. But these coaches, from just built off of their resumes and where they're coming in, those are legitimate salaries. And also, by the way, we have some people asking about Kendall Briles. Yes, Kendall Briles will also coach the quarterback. Right. So he's the quarterback coach and the offensive coordinator. So, you know, that's what you're going to be looking at. I'm going to be interested to see exactly what Barry Odom does besides just being a coordinator. You know, does he have a specialty? Is he going to be more helpful in a linebacker or safety? You know, where's that going to be? I'm not totally sure, but.
Well, I mean, you got a linebacker's coach, so my guess is safeties.
Well, right, but I'm just saying maybe he helps off, kind of like what Sam Pittman may do with the offensive line. Will, you know, Barry Odom help out with a particular position group? I'm not totally sure, but I will say that when we go through all of these names and we look at their resumes, we look at their names, we look at their salaries, we look at everything. And now that we know that Sam Pittman, you know, being the head coach and still the unknown and the mystery of how good he will be because of the lack of head coaching experience, all of those factors and all of those things. Tommy, I could be wrong. Maybe it's my rose-colored glasses that I'm putting on. Mm-hmm. But I would be hard-pressed to think that any other coach, realistic coach that Arkansas was looking at during the whole coaching search could have put together a better staff than what Sam Pittman just did.
particularly just adding to your statement there, particularly when Sam Pittman's a first-time head coach.
Yes.
I mean, this isn't like Sam Pittman's going to pull a guy over here from when he was a head coach at somewhere state 8 years ago. And this guy over here was a coordinator for me, my other head coaching job. You know, Sam Pittman's never been a head coach. Now, Sam Pittman's been around a long time, and he's coached with a lot of people, and he's coached for a lot of people. And that, you know, that tree and that network is in place. But it's particularly impressive when you consider the fact Sam Pittman's never sat in the big chair. And all of these guys, all 10 of these guys, still don't they may tell you they're comfortable, but at night, they're still not totally certain, because none of us are either, exactly how Sam Pittman's going to be as a head coach.
Yeah.
They're comfortable with Sam Pittman as a man, as a person, how he's been as an offensive line coach, recruiter. You can go through all those other things. The one thing none of us still know, and I guess probably to some degree Sam Pittman is still figuring out, is how is Sam Pittman head coach going to be?
Mm-hmm.
So for these men to put their faith in his hands, their careers in his hands, and for some of them it was, you know, for a Sam Carter or Ryan Rhodes, that's an easy call, because I'm moving from junior college football to the SEC. That's an easy call. You know, I'm moving from Georgia State to the SEC. That's an easy call. You know, for a guy like Kendall Briles, that's not as easy a call.
Or Barry Odom.
Now, Barry Odom didn't have a job.
Right.
But, you know, he could have took a, what they now, instead of going on the beach, they call it a gap year, you know. But yeah. gap years don't pay as well.
Yeah.
I guess if you have a buyout, they do. But, you know, they're putting their faith in him, and I think Sam Pittman's going to be excellent as a head coach.
Well, and here's
but there's a lot more to being a head coach than just, you know, deciding on third and one what you're going to do.
Well, here's another caveat that I'll throw in, is that we say coaches know coaches all the time. Mm-hmm. Good coaches know good coaches.
Yep.
And to me, when I see these coordinators especially, and some of these other coaches that have been around a long time and have probably coached with some of the great coaches, Hall of Fame type coaches, because it's usually how they make their way up. You know, Kendall Briles has coached for some phenomenal football coaches. Mm-hmm. I know that Barry Odom, you know, when he was up at Missouri, he knew Gary Pinkel, who was a great coach. I mean, he's been around those guys.
Yeah.
Coaches know coaches, and the fact that these coaches, like Barry Odom and Kendall Briles especially, they probably could have had multitude amount of jobs opening up for them at the same amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
They chose to coach with Sam Pittman. They chose to come to Arkansas. I don't think that there was any doubt in their minds that this was a bad deal, or that Sam Pittman was going to be a bad coach, because I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt in thinking that they would know better if they were suspect, or if they felt like Sam Pittman couldn't do the job, because they're like, I'm not going to take this job for 2 years and be gone. I'm not going to do that. So my looking at it from that perspective, I believe that these coaches who signed on to coach at Arkansas, who came to coach at Arkansas, when Sam Pittman was hired, remember he held up his phone and says, had over 500 text messages of coaches wanting to come coach here, coach you guys. Kind of seemed like coach speak, but you know what? Maybe it was true, because Sam Pittman is that type of coach, and coaches respect that type of coach as well.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins, straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Welcome back into the Morning Rush. We are brought to you by Art's Barbecue.
You know, we've been sitting here during the break talking about two things, eating healthy and then pizza. I don't know
perfect.
How those...
I mean, yeah, it goes together, right?
And Art's Barbecue and Burgers is the next thing we're going to talk about, because they want to make 2020 a healthier year for you. They got healthy choices on the menu, like smoked chicken, and their smoked chicken is incredible. You go in there and you get the half chicken, you get it for lunch, then you get a to-go box. It'll feed you and a to-go box for about two more meals, because it's a big, hearty half chicken. You get a variety of sides. You get a variety of salads to choose from on their menu. A lot of chicken choices. It's always a great choice there at Art's. So you're going to find a great menu of healthy options. So don't think just because it's a new year and a new you that you can't go to Art's because all they have is barbecue and burgers. They still have that. They still have all that delicious goodness, but if you want to go to Art's and still at least smell the burgers and the ribs and all the brisket. You can smell it, but you can still eat the good stuff because they got great salads, great smoked chicken, and a lot of different ways that you can put it together, and great sides. They got green beans and a lot of vegetable options as sides that they can put together. A great low-carb, low-cal meal for you as well. Plus, you can use the Waiter app to see the full menu to bring Arts to your home, your office, wherever you are at. Arts Barbecue and Burgers giving you healthy choices to start 2020 off right. Arts Barbecue and Burgers next to Aaron's on Rogers and Fort Smith.
Yeah, see, that's the worst thing about being on this show is that we all love food. And we all love unhealthy food.
Yeah.
And then we start talking about unhealthy food. And then I start thinking about, am I making the right decision in trying to be healthy? Am I making the right decision? Because, you know, Maddie T was just talking about this, you know, just the passes through these pizza places. And, you know, with me, it's not when I pass places. It's not when I think about it. It's because when I hang out with y'all is when we start talking about these things.
Yeah.
Because it's just annoying. Because, you know, me and Maddie were talking about how it was like we were going to to try to eat a little more healthier during this new year.
Yeah,
and
we're going to try to anyway.
Trying to. And then Ty did the same thing. And mm-hmm. he bought a lot of those little frozen meals that,
right.
You know, prepared meals.
Help you count your calories.
Exactly. Yeah. And then as he brings those in, last night I see him eating a large pizza by himself. Yeah. So
I mean, he posts on Twitter first thing in the morning. Yeah, he's at the gym getting it. And then ends the day by eating an entire pizza bar.
One of these days he's going to understand that, you know, if you go to the gym, no matter how, I mean, you'd have to be there for about 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, you got
to
spend all day there if you're going to work a pizza.
Work the entire large pizza off. But, you know, maybe one day he'll
understand. Speaking of 25 young, it doesn't matter at this point.
Give it a couple of years.
We'll catch up with him.
Oh, yes.
Speaking of Arts Barbecue, my girlfriend got me a gift card for there for Christmas, so I'm looking forward to
going. She's a keeper then.
She is, right?
Yeah. I mean, and listen, he's a big fan of the Kickin' Chicken.
I love it.
I mean, you can't go wrong with that. Every time I go, I got to get me the bacon. No matter what I'm eating. I could be eating me one of those chef salads, which are fantastic, by the way. It's like, I still got to get me a side of bacon on.
Are they still doing the macaroni and cheese?
Yes.
This is awful.
None of that's on the diet plan.
This is awful. Like,
can we get some low-cal smoked Gouda mac and cheese?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know what? I miss the man, but I am glad that Officer Breen doesn't come in as much as he used to now that he's retired.
Because, you were telling me about breakfast pizza?
Oh, yeah. He would go to Casey's and bring in breakfast pizza.
Oh, and we couldn't resist.
And you just couldn't do it. Right there.
Yeah, it's or nice that or Kolaches.
Oh, those are even worse.
Yeah, it's the basically it's a hot dog with cheese, it's inside of a donut.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I mean, it was just phenomenal. And I'm like, you're killing me, Officer Breeden.
It's all downhill from here.
I know, and it was like, you know, I do good the last day, but then I just blow it on all that. So that's the problem about being on the show is we love food too much, and we start talking about it. It's hard to be healthy here on the Morning Rush, I guess is my whole point when we love food as much as we do. So, all right, it is a Tuesday, and listen, when it's Tuesday, we got to get into some scrubs and dubs and decide who are some scrubs and dubs here on the Morning Rush.
Some people were born to get dubs.
I'm hollering loud because I can back up every word. And I'll whoop any man in the world. And I want everybody out there on TV to know it. I am the greatest.
Others were born to be scrubs.
These guys, I don't know if we're going to be able to beat anybody this year.
Don't listen to him, Hank. He's a loser.
Good thing we get to decide who gets dubs and who's the scrubs on the Morning Rush.
All right, I'll go ahead and kick this one off. I wanted to start with something positive. I'm going to give out some dubs. First dub that I want to give to, and this is not necessarily sports related, but is Ricky Gervais for his iconic and legendary monologue, especially of the Golden Globes. Mm-hmm. And for those of you who have not watched it, just go to YouTube and look it up.
Can you repeat some of his jokes?
I cannot. Not on these airwaves, because I don't think that they have the dump button. Here on the Morning Rush, like they did there on the NBC.
I got one right here.
Yeah, I don't know if your finger's going to be quick enough to get there, though, if I start repeating some of his jokes. But it was just awesome. And I love to see, especially, like, the Hollywood elites get made fun of and kind of called out for a lot of their nonsense. Like, called out for the fact that, they're all trying to come out for these causes and all this stuff. And it's like, yeah, but you still take private jets everywhere. You're still friends with guys like Harvey Weinstein. You knew Jeffrey Epstein. You knew all of those things. But yet you try to say that you're above in reproach. And the best thing he said was like, you know what? You guys aren't real people, essentially. You don't know what it's like being in the real world. So don't try to preach to everybody. It was phenomenal.
It's so funny when they're like groaning over however you want to see. He's like, it was you guys. It wasn't me.
Yeah, but say, you're the ones that knew him. Yeah. You're the ones that dealt with it. So it was just awesome. And it's fun to see that sometimes. Again, I don't watch award shows. The Hollywood elites always annoys everybody, no matter what you think or who you are.
Hey,
it always is annoying.
This is the first time we're talking about it, because any other time it would have been a who cares night. You know, it's...
The only thing
that made it interesting.
If I'd say Mark Wahlberg's up there doing it, we're probably not even... Right. I probably didn't even watch highlights of it all on YouTube. But it was just, he gets my dub. That was awesome. I wish we would get more of that at award shows where it's just making fun of each other. And that's what it needs to be. So I just had to get it up, and my dub goes to Ricky Gervais.
My dub goes to the Bud Walton Arena atmosphere and crowd. It was just great to see something sold out. The only thing we've had to really... celebrate as far as we come together as Arkansans has been Baum Stadium. And it was just great to see that building full, where you weren't having to, I don't say trick people, but you weren't celebrating a reunion or an anniversary, or you weren't naming something after somebody. You weren't luring somebody in with bait.
Yeah.
They just showed up to watch a team in a game. There was no other gimmick. There was no other promotion. It was just Eric Musselman and his team playing a conference game, really against A&M, just another
average SEC team.
And you out there showed up strong, 19-2. I mean, that's a dub for you on a Saturday where kids are going back to school on Monday. You probably had a lot of things to do to get ready for that. You know, trying to get back into a groove, get your house back in order. You know, your kids have eaten you out of house and home for 2 weeks. You probably didn't have the money to go after the holidays, but you did it anyway. So my dub goes to all of you out there, because it is great to see that back to where it once was.
Yeah. Well, I was all for it, because I miss those crowds, and I miss those moments where,
it relevant.
You show up to a game for the team. Not for any sort of gimmick.
And there was no bait.
And that's what it felt like for so many years. And I'm not saying, because Mike Anderson had some 19,000 crowds. I'm not saying that it was all that. But most of the times when they had their biggest crowds, or at least the games that they looked forward to the most, was either against Kentucky, because, you know, that's always going to draw a crowd, or they were having an honoring of a 94 team, Bill Clinton coming into town. You know, something like that is usually what it was about. So, you know, I just... To see that, and to see fans where they were like, no, we just want to go for the game itself, was awesome. Again, you probably all heard and remember my little rant about how the atmosphere should have been better. It's still good, but should have been better, because you know what the difference was? Remember that Little Rock crowd that was down there when they, of course, I forgot the team that they played, but it was a close game. Arkansas ended up getting a victory, and everyone talked about the crowd, how loud it was.
This year?
And the atmosphere. Yeah.
Valpo.
That's it. Yes, thank you. When they played Valpo down there, everyone was talking about that crowd.
Right.
Know why that crowd was good?
Because the team's good.
Well, it was that big part of it. But it was also because they didn't have to go down there and do any ads, any extra stuff. There wasn't. It was just, you know, a neutral site game. So the crowd dictated the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's what I feel. I'm not going to go on that rant again. I'm just saying, I agree.
Did you like all the little contests and stuff?
No, I did not.
I'm just telling you, as a parent of three and two kids in school, and you are glad to see your kids get back. Some got back. Mine went back yesterday. Some are going back today, depending on where you live. You're ready to get back into a routine. And it's just not a time of the year where everybody's just flush with cash, because you've just went through the holidays. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, when your kids are home at the holidays, they eat like $9,000 worth of groceries in the last 2 weeks. It's just unbelievable. And so, I mean, I people showing up in the way they did, it would have been a lot easier to not go, not spend the money on gas, or not spend the money on tickets, not spend the money on all these things that it took to go. So a dub to everybody out there that went.
No, that's a good one. I want to give a dub out just a few quick ones. Dub out to, honestly, Sam Pittman and the staff that he had put together, especially the fact that he's never been a head coach. There was a lot of people that were skeptical when he was hired, saying, how are you going to hire a guy that's never been a head coach? He's an offensive line coach. How many times do you see that work out? How many times do you see guys that never even been a coordinator? How does that work out? Well, let me tell you something. The thing about Sam Pittman that you had to have, if you were Sam Pittman, was hiring a great staff. I got a bunch of guys around you that SEC experience, and that's what he did.
And some head coaching experience.
And head coaching experience.
And a few others.
He went out and got that. I can't imagine anybody looking at this coaching staff that Sam Pittman assembled and say that, that's not that great. I mean, I'm not saying that Sam Pittman's going to be an amazing coach at Arkansas. I don't know what the success is going to be. Nobody knows that. But when it comes to what's on paper and the guys that he brought in, I don't think you could ask for anything more. And I doubt that Eli Drinkwitz, if he would have been hired, could have brought in this staff. I don't even think Lane Kiffin, if he was hired, could have brought in this staff. Just a really phenomenal job, especially under budget of what they said. Remember, Hunter Yearcheck said $5 million is what they're looking like for the pool. $25,000 over. Somebody's getting fired.
All that under budget?
Yeah, some probably's going to be losing their job today. He's like, probably not happening. But still, it was just, I had to give a dub at him. And also, real quick, Dub, this is just random, but I just thought this was an awesome stat from last night. I got to give a dub to Vince Carter. He has played in the past four decades in the NBA.
I guess if you started in...
He started in late 90s.
I guess if you started by 99, you technically played in that decade. Which to me, that's kind of cheating.
But it's still, it's funny because you can say he played in the 90s.
Yeah.
Played in the 2000s. Yeah. Played in the 2010s.
Yeah.
And now he is officially playing in the 2020s.
In some part of four decades.
Yeah. So I just thought that was a cool stat too. So give it up to Vince Carter. Still going strong in the NBA somehow after being in the league this long.
Yeah. So, I mean, that to survive... in any industry, playing as a professional, working, whatever you're doing, in one place for that long is that's quite an accomplishment, no matter what you're doing.
You don't see that in the NFL as much.
There's a little difference for that. Yeah. You see it in baseball. People play baseball forever.
Do you think golf, about what Tom Brady's done?
Oh, I know. And that's what makes it even more impressive is that he's still doing it. Him and like Frank Gore.
Because Brady's first year would have been what?
I think it was
because he played against Arkansas in that. In that Citrus Bowl.
It was 99 when he got drafted.
Same thing for him.
Oh, yeah. Wow. How about that?
Think about that.
Yeah.
And I don't think he's done either.
No, he's not going to be done until he sucks.
How about this with some buddies yesterday? You know, he's not what he was. He's not the clear and obvious number one quarterback in the league. But he's no worse than fifth or sixth.
No, most franchises right now would take
him. He's better than out of 32. He's not 32.
No. In fact, he's still top 10. Easily.
Or top five or six.
Yeah. I mean, I'd take
him. He's still more than serviceable. So
I would absolutely take him. All right. Moving on to the scrubs. This is something that I just don't understand. And I'm giving this scrub out, and maybe somebody can convince me or help me understand it a little more. The Bachelor. And The Bachelorette.
Is that what Ty was tweeting about?
Yeah. He was tweeting about it because, and here's my scrub and why I'm giving it out. And because I think Ty may be doing this, and as well as others. But I'm wondering, people that go all in start live tweeting The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, which, you know, it's almost like they're live tweeting a football game.
You know, Mel Kiper is all in on this, too.
Yes. It's a lot of sports media people.
Uh-huh.
Mike Golic Jr. is all about it. Barrett Salee is all about it. Yeah. Clay Travis is all about it. Like, all of these well-known, well-respected sports media guys live tweet The Bachelor like they're watching the college football national championship.
How could you possibly care?
And see, that's where I'm at, is because I've tried watching. I'm like, what? I want to know if this is some sort, what phenomenon this is. And I'm going to sit here and try to watch it to see if there's something about it that just makes me like, this is fun. I tried it last year and I tried it the year before, and I'm probably going to convince myself to give it one more shot this year. But I just don't get it. And I am wondering if maybe at this point in time, people are starting to get into it and live tweet it and all that just for the sake of live tweeting.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I know a few of my friends, and I'm like, I know you guys don't have that type of time and you don't like that type of stuff. I know you don't.
Yeah.
But yet they still get all in on it.
To live tweet it means you have to be there in front of the TV when it is live.
Watching it.
And who has that?
And responding to it.
Who watches anything live other than sports anymore?
I don't know. Apparently, The Bachelor.
You DVR everything, right?
I mean, yeah, and sometimes I don't even do
other
that.
I DVR games, but I rarely, I mean, you don't watch games that aren't, I mean, you always make an appointment. The only thing you make appointments for to watch on TV are sports.
Yeah.
If I want to watch something, I DVR it, I'll go back and watch it on demand.
Yeah. I mean.
And what's really happening from moment to moment that's that exciting? It's one chick, like, you know, trying to choose between 100 guys, you know?
Yeah.
Basically, she's getting with all of them anyway.
Yeah.
Now, this one, because I just... pure flower.
I just saw what Ty tweeted. This is The Bachelor this time, right?
Yeah, this is The Bachelor.
But he was tweeting this out.
All the chicks.
Yeah. So I could get why a dude like Ty would be getting with this show, because he's trying to watch the 25 or whatever beautiful women on the show. That's the only angle I can come up with why you would be interested in this.
But the 25 beautiful women ain't talking to me.
But exactly, oh,
if they're talking to me, okay.
It's a TV show.
If I had a chance with one of them, all right. But
you don't. It's a TV show.
They're going after some beautiful hunk of a man that's got a lot of money. So it's like, why am I doing this to myself? What am I watching here?
It makes me feel more inadequate.
Yeah, because I'm like, this is fantasy world because they're in the most beautiful destinations and they have the beautiful mansion they stay in. They're all dressed very nice. A guy probably looks like he smells like what Pierce Brosnan would smell like.
And, which is, in your opinion, good?
Yeah, which is, I mean, he just looks like he's got it all. And I'm over here like
James Bond reincarnated or something.
Yeah, it's like, and I'm over here just like sitting there opening up another bag of Cheetos or Doritos and just sitting there like, yeah, that Hannah Ann over there, she's the one that's going to win this one. I don't understand it at all.
You know why I can't watch it? I don't need any more drama.
I've got enough drama
just working here and going to my house. I don't need another dose of drama in my head.
Yeah.
Well, one reason I've watched shows like that is to feel better about myself. You know, you watch a show, you know, when everybody else is messaging, you're like, well, my life isn't
so
bad.
That's what Walmart's for, man. Yeah. You need to feel better. Just go to the State Fair or Walmart. You'll feel better.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to watch The Bachelor to do that.
You need a self-esteem shot, just go to
I just can't take it seriously. I don't get into it. I don't understand it. But like Jackson and Harrison just texted me, he said, I got started with just hanging out on the couch with the wife. Now I find myself downloading the DVR app just so I don't miss a second. All right, man, Jackson, that's just crazy. Mark in Jonesboro texted me, says a lot of these sports radio sports people who live tweet The Bachelor look down on those of us who are fans of professional wrestling or wrestling as it's referred to in Arkansas. I'd rather watch wrestling.
Wrestling.
Yeah, That's just amazing to me.
In and on at the same time, Monday Night Raw?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. Yeah, but The Bachelor's like 2 hours. It's a 2-hour show.
There is a show like that that could be perceived as, you know, like that. It's 90 Day Fiancé for me.
90 Day Fiancé?
And what it is, it's, you know, somebody from overseas, you know, they fall in love online and they have 90 days to get married or else they're... temporary visa goes away, but it's all these like kind of catfish type scenarios and stuff. But it's one of those I watch it just to see how
ridiculous
it is.
Yeah.
And I guess there's some sort of, you know, interest and intrigue in that, but it's just not for me. It's just not for me. So those of you who watch The Bachelor, power to you. I don't think I can ever get into it, and especially not live tweet it. But if you want to do that, that's your MO. Yeah. So that's who gets my scrub, is all the people who do that.
My scrub is Jason Garrett, who just couldn't seem to get the message that, dude, you're not going to be the head coach. And I guess Jerry Jones shares some of the responsibility in this, what looked to be a mess of lack of communication in this whole deal, who Jason Garrett's contract was up. They weren't going to renew it. They didn't have to fire him. But why couldn't they come out together and just have a joint statement, joint press release, something to make this thing look like less of a mess over the last 7 days until they hired Mike McCarthy? But it made Jason Garrett look like he was still running around the facility. Hey, I still may be the head coach. I still may be the head coach, because they kind of left him hanging out there. And he let himself be put in this situation. He looked very weak, very desperate in this situation. And I think awkward. It was very awkward. Yeah, awkward's a great word here. It was just very odd the way it was handled. And it reminded me of something like Jason had been with the Joneses. Garrett had been with the Joneses for so long, they just didn't have the heart to come and say the F word to him. You're fired. Well, they didn't need to fire him because his contract was up.
Or was it more of a Jason Garrett thing where instead of just leaving or saying, hey, I'm going to go, was it more of him like still trying to campaign and politic for the job? I don't know. It was all weird. But
very
weird.
But
if I'm Jason Garrett, man, I'm like,
somebody needed to man up in that deal, and it was on him, I think, just to say, hey, Jerry, let's fish or cut bait here.
Jason Garrett. He'll get another job, though, right? I mean, he had pretty good success for the most part. I know he wasn't the greatest coach of all time, but he wasn't awful.
I could see him being an OC somewhere. I don't know. It is a league of retreads, man.
Yeah.
So
I mean, isn't it funny? Like, college football is not really a league of retreads. Like, if a coach fails at one place, normally they don't get another shot for a long time.
But
NFL, they'll just keep going back after.
But he's kind of missed his spot. I mean, a lot of these openings are getting filled, and he's kind of waited himself. That's the whole thing. He's waited himself out.
Mississippi State's open.
I don't think you go from the Cowboys to
Starkville, but
it'd be eight.
McCarthy took this gap year, if you will, and, and spent time watching film with other coaches. Maybe that's what Jason Garrett should do.
Maybe so.
Level up, as they say.
NFL coaching searches are just interesting to me anyways. But, yeah, that's a whole other thing. That's a whole other big one. But, yeah, that's a good one because I think that this whole situation is just uncomfortable for everybody.
Well, it's uncomfortable to watch. Yeah. And I'm not a Cowboys fan. I'm a casual observer because I know we have a lot of listeners that are fans of the Cowboys. I just thought the whole situation was fumbled by all parties involved. Yeah. It just seemed like a total lack of communication where no one wanted to hurt anyone's feelings.
Yeah.
No one wanted to step on anyone's toes. You know, and I get it. You didn't have to fire the guy because his contract was up, what, January 14th or whatever? Mm-hmm. You owed him through then and you just move on.
Yeah. I don't know. I like to watch those afar, but I would not like to be involved with that situation whatsoever.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
And, you know, this is a unique day because we don't have a lot of in-studio guests because, you know, not a lot of people are willing to wake up as early as we do the show, but we are honored to have Brett Goode.
We were talking.
Yes.
He said Brett Goode earlier, then I said, no, it's Brett Goode, and you can correct both of us.
Yes.
How do you properly, because you have just moved past when people say it wrong, because everybody says Brett Goode, which is not actually correct, right?
It's not correct. I go by Goode, but I say
Goode is correct,
good.
Right?
Everybody says Goode.
So I said it right earlier.
Okay, so Brett Goode.
But Brett Goode is what everybody knows him as.
And the thing is like I told Tommy, I've known you since I've started this show, and I have said your name in front of you as Goode many times, and you have not once corrected me.
Well, it takes too long.
Because, you know, honestly, if you try to correct me, I probably think you were just messing with me if that was the case. But Goode. Okay, Brett Goode is with us. And, you know, it's good to have you on because it's been a while since we've been able to have you on. There's been a lot of stuff that's been going on. And I know that it was perfect timing to have you on, especially because there's a lot of Cowboys fans in this state, a lot of Cowboy fans that listen to the show. And Mike McCarthy just named the Cowboys head coach, a coach that you played for many years in the NFL. Cowboy fans are a little, some of them are skeptical, some of them are excited, but what do you think of that hire by the Cowboys?
I think it's a great hire. I got probably 15, 20 text messages and calls yesterday, people asking me if I was going over there or what I thought about it, but Mike's a proven winner, and that's what Jerry wanted, and that's what that kind of Dallas needs.
Yeah, for those that don't know, you played 10 years with the Packers, won a Super Bowl with the Packers, played all 10 of your years for Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, 10 years under Mike, and Mike's a great coach. We won a lot of division titles. We were always competitive, and even the years that Aaron was getting hurt, we were still making the playoffs, so it shows kind of his coaching techniques.
So what's his style? For those that probably watched the Packers but were Cowboys fans listening, what can they expect? I know Jerry's talked about wanting someone that's tough and brings in some toughness. What kind of style is he as a manager of a football team?
Tough. He's a Pittsburgh guy, family in the bar business, fire department, police department. It's just a tough, hard-nosed Pittsburgh Steeler type of guy. And that's what you're going to get as a tough football team.
So my question is when you're a coach that has success in the NFL, I mean, you can stay at that particular place for a long time. We've seen that happen. Obviously, Bill Belichick winning Super Bowls. It's been in New England. You had coaches that are a guy like Marvin Lewis that didn't even win a Super Bowl, but it was there for a long time. And then Mike McCarthy was at Green Bay. Why didn't it work out and continue to go on? I know that there was always these stories coming out, but it seemed like he always was competitive. They were always in the playoffs. They were always competing for a Super Bowl. Was it just simply he didn't win enough Super Bowls? Why didn't it work out with Mike McCarthy in Green Bay?
I think it's a little bit of everything. You know, under the Belichick-Brady era where people and quarterbacks are winning more than one Super Bowl. Yeah. You know, if you go look at all the great coaches, it's one Super Bowl, maybe two. It's tough to win. And Green Bay, you win a lot, and they expect a Super Bowl, and we just couldn't get there. And then all of a sudden, he's out.
Sounds like the SEC.
Yeah.
Just win every year. That's all we expect is a national title every year.
Just be Nick Saban.
Yeah. Win the Super Bowl every year. Yeah. So what do you think's on the horizon for Dallas here? Can McCarthy, I guess, quote unquote, turn this around? 8-8 obviously didn't cut it after a 3-0 start, and they move on.
Ton of talent
from Jason Garrett. He inherits what appears to be a ton of talent, but you never know in the free agency era what you're going to end up with. So, what do you think that the horizon is for the Dallas Cowboys in your estimate?
I think the greatest thing for what I'm most excited to learn about is that he's never had an Ezekiel Elliott. You know, he's gone from quarterbacks, Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, Hall of Fame quarterbacks. Now he's got a Hall of Fame running back. And what's he going to do with that? Because I think that he has the mindset to really make that offense go around there and a good offensive line to make them really competitive.
Here's the million. Here's the $10 million question. How does Jerry Jones and Mike McCarthy coexist? Because we know Jerry runs the show. We know he has post-game press conferences. We know he is the owner and the general manager, and he is going to be very outspoken. How, I mean, you know Mike McCarthy's personality. How will he deal with that kind of environment?
I think it'll be good for him. First time him having an owner as a head coach, and then you say he worked with Ted Thompson for all those years, and Ted Thompson was kind of unorthodox with a lot of his picks and the way that he did things, and I think Jerry will be the same way, and so I think they'll work really good hand in hand.
The value of a quarterback in the NFL, I mean, is just everything, you know, and it's just every, if you think about it just in the grand scheme of things, it's like, you know, there's probably 8 to 12 great quarterbacks in the world, because and there's 32 teams, so it's only so many. And obviously having Aaron Rodgers is helpful, but there's a lot of people that always say that, well, a coach is only as good as the quarterback he has. And maybe some people look at Mike McCarthy, well, the success that he had was just because he had Aaron Rodgers. Or Bill Belichick, the only reason he had that success is because of Tom Brady. And there's so many examples of it. But you could probably attest to the fact that it does, it's more than just that. It does take more than just that. Great quarterback helps, obviously, but having a coach and having a relationship with that quarterback that can be a fully functioning relationship is probably very important as well.
It has to be. Your quarterback leads the team, and that's you're exactly right. There's not 32 starting quarterbacks, but there is. And that's the way the league is driven. That's the way the SEC is driven. I mean, that's the way football is. You have to have a quarterback to run your offense, but you also have to be disciplined and tough and hard-nosed, and I think that's what he brings to the table. And just, you know, his assistant staff, I think they're going to come on board and really make that team better.
Former Razorback, former Green Bay Packer, Brett Goode in studio with us. You can call or text your questions if you got one for Brett. 877-377-6963. Already got a couple of questions that have been texted into the show. We'll get to those coming up. So if you have one, you don't want to call, you can text your question in, or you can call and we'll get you on the air in just a little bit. We'll get back to the Cowboys and the NFL conversation. I want to ask you about, we haven't had a chance to ask you about the Razorbacks, and you played for Houston Nutt. You've watched what's unfolded the last 2 years. We've talked to you about Chad Morris and what's happened there. Sam Pittman's now there. We hadn't had a chance to talk with you about it since an O-line coach took over. That's kind of your specialty. You were a long snapper in the NFL, but you played O-line at Arkansas. You've sat in on all the O-line meetings. Now you got an O-line coach in charge in Fayetteville. What does that excite you? How do you feel about that? Because it's somewhat unique to have an O-line guy running things as the head coach.
I think it kind of goes the same thing with Mike McCarthy, is makes him tough. You know, that's where it's kind of won and started is offense and defensive line. He knows those guys. He knows how to coach them. It's proven that when he was at Arkansas, how good our offensive line was, and then when he left, how bad we were. And the same thing he did at Georgia. So he's a proven guy. You know, there's a lot of people that talked about it. And you go back and look at Joe Gibbs. He was an offensive line guy, and he turned into a great head coach, obviously. So I'm really excited for him. I'm excited for the staff because people obviously are loving him.
I maybe look too deep into this, but this is how my mind works. Is I feel like, you know, offensive line coaches maybe not get the opportunities that some of them may deserve because they're not the sexy offensive coordinator that's quarterback coach that's running all over the place and having great offenses. But I feel like offensive line coaches is one of the few, if not the very most great example of this, where you have a unit and you have to be able to control those five guys and be able to put them in positions where they're best suited to be able to work with them on the things that they have to work on and their strengths and weaknesses and just getting that team, if you will, to work. And I've always felt like that was interesting because to me, that would be a great translation into being a head coach is because it's a very similar is having to work with the guys that you have, having to put them in positions to be successful where as a quarterback coach, you just got to really, I mean, you got a group of guys, but it's about that one guy that's starting or the running back that's in that play. Or, you know, there's other examples of it. But I just feel like the offensive line coaches maybe not get those chances because they're not the great sexy hires, but I feel like they could translate because of that unit that they coach.
And that's a valid statement. You think about a quarterback, he's going to work with one and two, maybe three, depending on who they're playing. Yeah. But offensive line, they've got to work with five different positions and the backups. And then you got to make your center have all the same communication that the quarterback's having. So you are working with the biggest group, and they have to be the smartest group on the field.
your specialty has been special teams. That's where you played and won a Super Bowl in the NFL. Arkansas has now, for the first time, got a true dedicated special teams coach with Scott Fountain, who comes from Georgia. This is something you've been an advocate for, that Arkansas needed to dedicate that 10th position, and Sam Pittman has done that. What have been the deficiencies from your trained eye that Arkansas has had in special teams, and how do you think having one dedicated coach will change some of those things?
I think the biggest thing is lack of consistency. You know, one week we're up, one week we're down, and I think when you hire a guy that is all about special teams, it's not about just the snapper, punter, and kicker. During practice, he's watching all the other athletes, being able to say, okay, he can be my R5 on kickoff coverage, or, you know, he can be my returner, he can be on punt return, and he's able to kind of evaluate live in practices to be able to see where to place guys.
Yeah, because special teams, I can't figure out, because over the past, basically the Brett Bielema era and the Chad Morris era,
been a killer.
It's cost you many games, and it's not just, like you said, as simple as just having a good kicker. But you've had the poor kickoff coverage. You've had breakdowns. We all remember the infamous fake fair catch punt return for a touchdown. The fake punt that Arkansas tried. I mean,
you've had just embarrassing moments.
Yes,
it's just embarrassed the program a couple of moments with special teams plays.
Right, and I always felt like, and maybe you can attest to this too, Brett, as I felt like not having a special teams coach, you know, people like to gloss over it because it's like it's a joint effort. But if your special teams are suffering, especially as much as it has over the past few years under Brett Bielema and Chad Morris at Arkansas, then maybe that's something you need to look at, is having one guy focused on that unit, because as we've seen over the past 7-8 years, it is extremely important to have great special teams, or at least serviceable special teams, so that way you don't have these major breakdowns that cost you games.
It is, and special teams is one of the hardest positions to coach, because you're taking 11 guys from offense, defense, and the specialists, combining them and trying to teach them in a short period of practice, and you only get one down to get it done.
How did y'all do it in Green Bay when you only got 53 on the roster? Now, your practices were much different because you weren't limited to the 20 hours a week that Arkansas is to do everything, you know, like you are in NCAA. So how do you go about it in the pro game where you have fewer players to choose from to be on special teams, but you got more time, versus how you do it in college game where there's just less time to practice everything?
Well, in professional,
you got more players to choose from.
Absolutely. Professional football, your quarterbacks, outside of Taysom Hill with the Saints, who's a freak, but your quarterbacks, your starting offensive line, starting defense line, everybody else is playing special teams. And if you look across the league, the good special teams in NFL, their starters are playing, they have to. And that's the biggest transition that we've always said with guys coming out of college, trying to get in on an NFL team, learn to play special teams and you'll make a roster, because that's what they look for. And you have to start on the starting four, with big four, which they call kickoff, return, punt, return. And you want to be a starter on that. And it's the same way with Arkansas. You want to take your best athletes to an extent and put them on your special teams, because it is a third of the game, regardless of how you try to spin it.
I think it's funny on special teams, especially, is that when during the college football season, it's kind of a running social media thing. If somebody misses a kick, it's always called just college kickers. Because it just seems like, especially at a place like Alabama, for instance, who's been known to having kicking woes, it's like, how do you have so much talent at every position, but yet you just can't figure out kicker? And there's been many times where we've seen a phenomenal kicker come from some small school, like Toledo or something like that. I don't understand, if you're a coach, how do you sit there and you can say at a high school or whatnot that, hey, this kid's going to be good at my school, and I want to give him a scholarship as a kicker, because it seems like it's so hit and miss. Zach Hawker was a phenomenal kicker, but from what I remember, it wasn't like, you know, people were just coming after him from all over the place. It just seems like also it's one of the most difficult positions as a kicker to say, and to be able to evaluate and say that this guy is going to translate to the college level, even though he may have been good in high school, doesn't always mean that's the case.
And that's really hard, because there's a ton of kickers out there. Yeah. And they all, which kind of go off of their leg and their kind of their head, you know, how they can take things mentally, and the capacity they take things in. But kicking is a hard job to pick.
Brett Goode in studio with us here on the Morning Rush. We're brought to you by NWA Gold and Silver in Bentonville and in Fayetteville. They're going out of business, but there's still time for you to save up to 70% off on Arkansas's largest selection of fine jewelry, just in time for Valentine's Day, which is not that far away. Over $3 million worth of inventory must be liquidated. We're talking diamond engagement rings, diamond earrings, necklaces, pendants. You can save up to 70% off during this sale at NWA Gold and Silver. Now, you can find them at 1130 North Walton in Bentonville, and in Nelson's Crossing by Jason's Deli in Fayetteville. Up to 70% off during the going out of business sale at NWA Gold and Silver in Bentonville and in Fayetteville. I know these camps for specialists have become more and more popular in the last 2 to 3 years, especially, but over the last five. And that's where I think a lot of these guys that John's talking about have gotten identified. Your position of long snapper, but holders, kickers, all of these guys go to these camps. I know guys like you, I don't know how much, if you've attended any as a clinician or and taught at any of these recently, but these have become far more popular. And as far as coaches, that would be a special teams coach like Scott Fountain, looking at these rankings that come out of these camps and identifying these guys, that's where a lot of these guys are getting identified anymore, right? Is coming out of a lot of these specialist camps that go on throughout the summer.
And that a lot, you have to. Those guys rely on that. It's just like Rivals. There's nothing that people go to high school football games and are saying, oh, this kicker's great. They have to go to these camps in the summers, and it's not just your senior year. They didn't have it for snappers until I was done with college, you know, and now they do for snappers. I know Coles has a kicking camp in Wisconsin that is huge. And then, you know, you have a specialist combine for the NFL now. And it's just, it's really transitioning to get these guys' names out there, and they have to have that help.
Let me ask you this question, because you've been a deep snapper, and obviously you were successful enough to be in the NFL. It's, as far as the totem pole of positions that people think about, I'm sure it's pretty low, but there's a need for it. How does, if there's somebody listening out there, it's like, I want to be a deep snapper in the NFL. Like, is that something that you just kind of wanted to do in college and it worked out in the NFL? I mean, how does becoming a deep snapper work? Because I don't know many people that just say in high school, I don't want to be a quarterback. I want to be the deep snapper.
I think the biggest thing was for me was I was snapping in high school, and it led me to the transition of college. And then you start going and you think there might be a chance. But I didn't even know I'd had the opportunity to play until I was completely done with college. There was no rumors or anything until I got invited to the Senior Bowl. So it was a tough transition, but it, you know, you still have to ride the highs and ride the lows, because it's a long road. The only time you're really getting a job is by injury or age. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't really change them out for performance because all the guys can snap.
But what were you doing when you got the call to come to camp?
I was born concrete.
Yeah. I always thought that was a great story.
98 degree heat, so it was fun.
Oh. He gets a call. Hey, how would you like to come? It was kind of like the, hey, how'd you like to manage the Cleveland Indians? I don't know. I'm talking to a guy about some white walls. You know? Call you back, Charlie. you go from a construction site to an NFL camp.
And that's the way it works. You look at all the specialists throughout the league. They all have a pretty similar story. The guy who replaced me 1 year after I tore my ACL, he's working at a sub shop. And now he just re-signed a deal with Philadelphia. So it's just kind of the way that whole specialist program works.
Goes from Jimmy Johns to the Packers.
Yeah. So do you think that there should be maybe, if like there's kids out there, then in high school, maybe they can't make it to the NFL base because of whatever reason. Maybe they're not fast enough, strong enough, whatever. Do you feel like there maybe should be some emphasis for some college coaches maybe even saying, hey, you know, maybe he can't get in the NFL as a true offensive guard or something. But this is a position that there's something that, like you said, people don't leave a lot. So it's not like there's a lot of openings. But I feel like if it's something that somebody could work on and try their hand at, it might be something that could have some emphasis put on it.
Most definitely. You know, Rob Davis, the guy that was before me, he played 11 years for the Packers, and he came in as a defensive line that could snap. And I remember plenty of times that we kept an offensive lineman or an offensive tight end that could snap as a backup. And that just shows you how important it is that they're going to keep a guy that can do something else. It's the more you can do.
Mm. Yeah, because I've
– multi-skilled.
Because I know that, like, when I was playing in junior high and whatnot, we had a deep snapper, but, I mean, it was never good. There was no work that was put into it. You know, there wasn't a coach or anybody that's saying, all right, let's spend this entire drill on deep snapping. It was just not a lot of emphasis put on it. So I've just always felt like, because I have a nephew that plays in high school football, I was like, hey, man, just try deep snapping, man. Maybe that's your calling. Maybe that's what you can get into.
You never know. And, again, the more you can do it, the better you get a chance of staying in.
Yeah, yeah. That's for sure. There's a few
other – make a pretty good living at it, right?
Hey. Real good.
Yeah, listen, yeah. If you're in the NFL, you know you're making a good living. We just got a few minutes left in this segment. But there's a lot of stuff I want to get your opinion on. But one of the things is, especially in college football today, and we were talking about this early in the week, that – Joe Moorhead from Mississippi State was fired, and it's just a weird timing right now for coaches. But he gets fired. We saw Chad Morris get fired after only 2 years. Matt Luke was there 2+ years, but not really. There's this idea that in college football that coaches are just getting fired at the whim, and they're not giving enough time to these coaches to really develop. Do you feel like it's really a problem right now in college football where coaches are getting the boots too early, where they're not really given a proper chance to get their foundation laid and try to build their program?
I think certain programs, yes. You look at the inconsistency and never being able to kind of build a program. you're going to be struggling. And you look at Arkansas, how many coaches we've had since Houston Nutt. And so we've had no consistency of that. And that hurts your recruiting, hurts everything about, you know, trying to build a program. So it is tough, but sometimes you do have to fire coaches that just don't show that they can do it.
Yeah. So with McCarthy in Dallas, are you now a Cowboys fan?
I'm a McCarthy fan for sure.
Knew the answer to that.
Yeah. You can at least root for the man.
Hey, you know, he's got like a really good record in Dallas too, so...
Yeah, well, he won a Super Bowl.
And where did you win your Super Bowl?
Oh, Dallas, yes.
Yeah. Must be nice. Well, I know that there's the excitement for Cowboys fans is that they're hoping that maybe that Super Bowl excitement, because I was looking at his record in playoff and everything. Him and Sean Payton have pretty identical records. And, you know, Sean Payton's considered to be just one of the best coaches. But, I mean, he's very comparable as far as records go.
He's got the second most wins in playoffs. And that's another great point of Sean Payton. You don't hear a lot of times with Sean and Drew. You know, they've only won one Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And so it's just really tough.
You want to hang for another segment or you got to go?
Sure.
All right. Brett Good with us here in studio. If you got questions, text or call 877-377-6963.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon, lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle. And Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
We got Brett Good here with us, the former Razorback and Green Bay Packer. It's going to take me a while. I'm just telling you to get your name right from here on out because it's just you get so used to it.
You can say whatever you want.
But I told Tommy, I was like, is that what the E's there for at the end?
Because, I'm assuming so.
Yeah, it makes sense. It all works out. So
got a couple calls and some questions that have been brought to us on text and Facebook Live, so we can work through some of those this segment.
Okay.
If you want.
Yeah, let's go to the phone lines. And John is in Illinois. What's going on, John?
Hey. Yeah, I was, we had seen some stuff about Arkansas's long snapper, that he was pretty good and stuff. And I wonder if Brett had seen him or how he maybe compares with the rest of the college football.
I have personally worked with him in the off seasons. I don't technically work with anybody during the season because I don't want to screw with their head or anything. But we've worked together, and he has my cell phone number, and he sent me text messages kind of what's going on and any questions that he has, and just trying to kind of be a mentor to him. But he's did a great job last year, and I think he'll just get better.
Very good. How about the rest of the special teams?
I think what we're going to have to do is figure out how the program's going to go. You know, it's going to be hard to try and get back in that. But if you look at all the good teams, they have good special teams. And that's one thing that everybody's got to buy into that program and really take leadership to have a good special teams.
Yeah, I appreciate the phone call, John. I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, we talk about offense and we talk about defense and we talk about the importance of those coordinators and the impact that they're going to have. But as we were talking about in the previous segment, man, it's not that if you have great special teams, because there's only a few places that actually have great special teams. But if you have bad special teams, that really impacts you almost worse than anything, because as John L. Smith used to put it, it was battles for large chunks of land.
One play wars for giant chunks of land.
Yeah. It can change the entire game for many different reasons. I mean, and I think back to, in good and bad, because I think back to the Bobby Petrino years. It seemed like their special teams was on lock. They had Zach Hawker kicking. Dylan Breeden was a fantastic punter. Joe Adams was returning punts. And then Dennis Johnson returning kicks. It was all set. But you saw how many games made a difference just by having playmakers like that. Not just in the return game, but knowing that you could count on Zach Hawker to make his field goals in a crunch. To know that Dylan Breeden's going to be back there and you're going to be hitting punts that are at least 40 yards, you're not going to be shanking them, and it's going to at least give you got your teammate an opportunity to get down the field. I mean, those are just things that get overlooked, but it can cost you in so many different games, but it can also benefit you in so many games.
And benefits, a key word, is knowing all the rules. You look at what Tennessee did to New England this last weekend, is they knew the rule that if you were outside of 5 minutes and you had your punt team out there and you did a false start, you could keep the clock running. And then Bill Belichick did that earlier in the season. But you have to know those little bitty rules that kind of helps you get a win.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Greg in Fort Smith wants to know what you've been doing these days. What are you doing now?
Playing golf. I'm still kind of a stay-at-home dad, even though my wife wants me out of the house, off her hair. And I've been studying for kind of my next career.
Yeah. So so when you play golf now, is it playing golf just casually, or is it like you play golf like all the time.
When it's warm, I play golf.
Okay, all right. So just, I just wanted to make sure, because there's things like I play golf, but it's not, you know, to the extent and as much as I probably would like
it to
be.
He plays like 5 days a week. It's a golf.
Yeah. So your golf
game. I'm on the unlimited program.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So your golf game is probably pretty good.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
But you got to keep your handicap right so that you can win bets.
If you weren't an NFL player, would you have wanted to be a professional golfer? Do you enjoy it that much?
You know, it's so funny because you go ask a lot of NFL guys and they always want to be a musician or a golfer.
Really?
And then you go ask a golfer and they want to play sports and it's nobody's ever happy.
No, no. They
but
always
you like playing music too, don't
I like playing music. That's kind of.
What do you play?
Guitar.
Really?
Yeah. Aaron and I actually did a little gig at a coffee shop one time.
In Green Bay?
In Green Bay.
Was it like announced like a big deal or was it one of those
supposed
underground?
To be. It was supposed to be like 20 people and then they got word that he was going to be there and there was like 100 people.
Oh, man. Hey, I mean, it's probably good business for him.
It was good for them that night.
See, well, because it's funny that, because I feel like being a golfer, a professional golfer, it's a game you play and as long as you're good at it, it's probably very frustrating as well. But it's like, it's something that you can play for a long time. It's enjoyable. You can, you know, you go to awesome places and whatnot. So is the golf something you always loved even back then when you were a kid and all that? Or did it develop more as you got
older? I played it when I was a kid, but I didn't take it as serious as I wish I would have.
Yeah.
It's because it is one of those things that you can play forever. And it's the ultimate game of misses. It's just trying to make everything as small as possible.
It'll make you go mentally insane is what it'll do.
That's what a beer's for.
Yeah.
Are you a Callaway guy?
No.
Okay. What are, Ping? No. I'm just throwing names
DXG
out there. Oh, okay.
That's what I have right now.
Okay. All right. Well.
Big time.
Yeah. I'm just throwing terms out. Like, I know the difference. I know that some are good and some are bad. But, yeah. But it's good to, obviously, you know, you can do that where you can play golf as much as you want to. And, you know, maybe one
as
day.
As much as his wife will let him. Yeah. He's not being honest.
Okay. Well, that's.
As much as his wife will let him.
Yeah, that's the key term. That's the key term. But I'm hoping one day I can get to that point to make that Tommy Craft money where I can do that.
As many kitchen passes as he can get is how often he plays.
Yeah. We've got Brett Good in studio with us here on the Morning Rush. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or to text in. You got one more segment in you? Can you power through the final ones? Can you put up with this? All right. So he's going to put up with us for one more segment. And we'll get to all that in the final segment of the Morning Rush coming up next. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
Good in studio with us. We're taking your phone calls at 877-377-6963. Brett played for the Green Bay Packers for 10 years. He was a former Razorback. Talking special teams this morning. Talking Mike McCarthy to the Cowboys. He played for him for 10 years. If you got questions this morning, we got a few more minutes to answer those for you here on the Morning Rush. We're brought to you by the Kevin Hickey Law Partners. If you're going through a divorce, child custody issue, DHS, or a criminal matter, it can hit you hard, especially this time of the year where you're coming through the holidays. It can be an emotional, taxing experience, and you need aggressive, experienced lawyers that are in your corner fighting for you. That's where Kevin Hickey can enter the equation and help you. They've seen it all, dealt with it all, so no matter what you're going through, they can help you through this right now with their experienced, caring individuals that are ready to step in and aggressively represent your interest. Call Kevin today, 479-434-2414 in the River Valley. Their office in Northwest Arkansas is 479-802-6560. You can get both of those phone numbers and a lot more about Kevin online at kevinhickeylaw.com. That's kevinhickeylaw.com.
All right, I got a few very important questions since we got Brett Good in with us right now. First off, you had long hair when you were in the NFL.
At one point.
Like really long. We're talking very long. Was that because you just didn't want to cut it and it was like cold up there in Green Bay? Or was it more just you like the style of going with the long hair? Because I loved it. Like it made you look like a Green Bay guy, if you know what I mean.
It's a little bit of both. You know, okay. Winter's coming, you kind of start growing the beard.
Yeah.
You kind of get warm and it just kind of a little bit of everything. You get bored and you don't want to do it. It gets dark at 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Okay. Because I thought about doing that once myself, maybe not to that length, but I get lazy and I just can't.
We still have to cut it though. You have to cut off the end so it grows better.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the thing is I was trying to pull that off. It wasn't working for me. So, but I'm glad that you could pull it off too. And because I've always found it fascinating with guys in the NFL, especially depending on the position that you play, is about the diet and about the food and what you can eat. Because if you're Tom Brady or somebody like, you know, I don't think he's going out and eating fried food all the time. You know, or it's a lot of these wide receiver skill position guys that have to eat. But as an offensive lineman, does your diet, I mean, obviously there is some changes that you have, but does your diet pretty like very strict? You have to do it this certain way, or can you kind of let loose a little bit more than some of the other players in the NFL?
The biggest thing is learning how to do weight control, and you kind of adjust it off that. You want to maintain a weight. It's like my max weight was 268. And so, you know, you don't want to be over that because you obviously get fined. But I was way under that. I played at 258. And so it's just kind of controlling that. And then the wintertime, you can kind of eat a little bit more because the cold weather, you burn a little bit more.
Yeah.
I remember when you were at the end, after you'd had the knee problem, looking to come back, and you decided you weren't going to play anymore and retirement was your next step. You said, man, I can finally quit eating all this stuff. Because you were having to, when you were still in limbo there, remember we were playing some golf and spending some more time around each other, and he's like, I got to keep eating all this stuff so I can keep my weight. So if I go back to play, I'm still within weight range. And it was a job for you to just keep eating as much food as you had to eat to keep your weight. And, you know, that sounds backwards from a lot of us thinking about we're trying to watch our calories this time of the year. But you got certain players. You look at guys like, I remember, you know, Daryl Johnston, when he played at the weight he played in at tight end, and then I saw him in person years later and how much thinner and slimmer he was, because a lot of these guys, when they get done, they cut a lot of weight because they don't have to eat as much.
And that's exactly right. And you look at Joe Thomas and Gronk here recently, how light they look in the face, and you have to maintain it. When I graduated high school, it was you have to gain weight, have to gain weight. And so the only way you can do it is eating.
Mm-hmm. Which is just so tough, I know, for so many people to eat and eat hearty and eat good. Yeah, I would hate that for sure. Let's go to the phone lines. BA's in Texarkana. What's going on, BA?
First of all, I'd like to say that your wife's peanut butter icing looks great. I wanted to tell you that.
Thank you.
I can jump to the screen and get some. And second of all, I'd like to say, John, you look better growing that beard back.
Yes, I agree. I agree, B.A.
And Brett, this is the main question I want to ask you. I don't know if you guys have discussed it or not, but did you ever watch... Did y'all talk about the Razorback snapper to the quarterback in the gun this year? He dropped it back there. It looked like a fifth-grade girl playing slow-pitch softball from being a pitcher. Yeah. And it just
it floated back there. It just kind of floated.
It almost a half a second, at least.
Yeah.
And what can you do about that?
That's a good question, P.A.
I think with our two offensive line coaches that we're having on staff, we'll be able to get that fixed really good. The biggest thing about that is just committing to it. It's like everything you do in football, is you don't second guess it, you just go with it.
Yeah, so that was, I think, noticeable to the untrained eye, to all of us, how the snap, and that's a great question, PA, the snap this year for Arkansas in the gun just seemed to forever hang in the air getting to the quarterback. A, how does that affect the timing of the offense? And B, as your trained eye, what did you notice and how that was affecting the offense and just affecting the operation of the offensive line? And B, why was it happening?
I think
it was why does a center snap at that cautiously? Why are you, because it appears timid to me why you would do it that way. Like it's a lack of confidence.
It's a lack of confidence, not knowing what the real snap cadence is, not being confident in who you're blocking, who, you know, the motion that's going through, trying all the timing things that you got to get those things down, and it's being able to practice that. And I think with our coaching staff being able to kind of get that converted, it's not that hard to snap to the quarterback. You look across the league, the teams can do it, and the timing's right. And so that's one thing we definitely need to fix.
How much was it when you got a different quarterback? Because Arkansas obviously had more than a few starting quarterbacks this year. When you got a different guy back there, different heights, different cadence, how does that affect a center in snapping the ball when you've got a different guy with a different voice, different way of calling it, different way of all of it, the whole communication setup? How does it affect you as the one snapping the ball?
Very much. And I know we went off the hand clap a lot, too. And guys kind of clap differently. You wouldn't think it, but they do. Some guys are faster. Some guys are slower. And you really have to make sure that you're snapping it on that clap. And it's hard.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that was so frustrating. And it's never something you ever think is an issue. Like, or at least previously. Like, with Arkansas, there was never a problem where people looked. It's like, man, the snap's not getting there. But then it's nothing. It's just you feel like it's automatic. Because you start doing that when you're in junior high. As far as the snap, it's not like the yardage changes or anything like that. It was just, it was a frustrating thing. And it makes me wonder, as far as, you know, I guess Ty Cleary was the main one that was doing the snapping this season, but whoever ends up being, I mean, how simple of a thing is it just to coach and to change? I mean, is it something that's going to take a lot of time to do, or is it just a couple here and there mechanics, boom, there you go?
I think it's easily fixed with the coach that knows what they're doing.
That's probably the best way to put it, yeah. It's amazing just how some of those simple things, though, can have such a negative impact. But that's what was frustrating, because it's like, that should be such a fixable thing, that you've gone this long and you're playing college football in the SEC and you can't get a snap to the quarterback. It's just, it's mind-blowing things like that that just frustrates Razorback fans looking back and saying, what in the world was going on in those practices if you can't even get the snap down?
And that's the biggest thing, is you always have those things. You're like, well, they can't even snap the ball right. You know, the whole program's a mess because they can't even snap it. And that's what you start talking about.
Yeah.
Have you talked to Sam Pittman since he's been back as head coach? Did you have a relationship with him when he was here prior as offensive line coach?
I did not and have not.
Okay.
So he was.
Is working with snappers at Arkansas something you'd be interested in?
I have done it. So, yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, maybe they're listening.
So if I was to go out here in the front and you were going to teach me, coach me to deep snap, Where am I going to start? What's it all start with as far as getting the deep snap?
First I'm going to go out there and see if you can actually throw a football over just normal.
Okay, I think I can hopefully do that.
If a person can't throw a football normal, you have to teach them to throw first.
Okay, all right. Well, just say, assume, let's do the assuming game. I can throw a football.
Okay, then we're going to put two hands on the football and standing up.
Okay.
And see if you can throw it that way. And we're going to do some hand mechanics and kind of go about that. And then we're going to kind of turn over.
So, like, two hands, like, do I have to, like, throw it overhead type of thing?
Okay. Overhead.
With a spiral?
With a spiral.
Ooh, I'll tell you one thing you don't want to do, John, is get a few adult cocktails in you and claim you can catch one of his snaps at full speed.
I'm assuming this is something you did.
No, but I know someone who tried.
Yeah.
And it will lead to...
Hit him in the face.
No.
Oh. We used to try to break fingers.
It will break fingers.
Oh, okay. All right.
Got a buddy named Kevin that had a broken digit.
I will make sure that I do not do that.
After he was warned several times.
Warned.
Yeah.
So if you ever think you can catch, you think it's hard to snap, to catch the snap of an NFL snapper.
Well, that was going to be my question as far as, you know, people, you watch it on TV or watch, you know, baseball, for instance, and you don't really understand how fast that pitch is coming or how fast that ball is thrown, because they make it in the NFL or in the MLB or whatever, make it look so easy because that's what they're doing. What can you compare it to as far as the speed of a snap, a deep snap like that? Like, how fast is it coming at you?
I've heard some people try to say it was like between 30 and 40 miles an hour, what it would kind of be like. But you think about like an extra point or field goal, you try and get it 1.25 seconds, you know, and that's from the time that the snapper moves to the time it kicks.
How many yards are you back?
8 yards.
8 yards. Wow, okay.
Because you think about it, like in a punt situation, you've got to get it back there because you want hang time of 4.2 or 3, 4, whatever.
Hang time of 4 to 5.
Yeah, and then...
Do you want to get it back to the punter 15 yards at 7/10 of a second?
Yeah, because it's all about getting your coverage down there. Mm. Why do you want guys that can run a 40 in 4.5? Well, because it's all about math, you know?
Well, I will.
And that's why you can't have a snap that's taken half a second longer than it should. It's that simple.
Well, Will just messaged in. He says, I'm sure it's harder to catch these punts when it's in Green Bay weather, too.
The ball feels like a rock, and it's really cold.
Man, so if you can deep snap in Green Bay, you can deep snap anywhere. Is it that type of thing?
Kind
of, okay, yeah. Because that's the thing is, like, when I've always wanted to, like, see what it's like in the NFL, because I like seeing those comparisons. Something that won't hurt me, because I don't want to get hurt, but just... You know, what is it like as far as full speed goes in the NFL? And then you can really, truly appreciate it. Like, you know, what would it be like having Tom Brady throw you a pass? Because like, you're like, yeah, I can catch a ball if my buddies are throwing it. But, like, about with Tom Brady's throwing me a 5-yard out?
And think about in Green Bay at times, we had frostbite warnings and we were playing games with our hands exposed.
Toughest guys in the NFL, right? Yeah. So how did you combat that? Did you just have to get over it?
I would shake for like 5 hours after the game trying to warm up.
My goodness.
You just deal with it.
There's not like sickness all the time. Like,
it's almost too cold sometimes.
I mean, that's what I was just wondering about. I was like,
nothing survives except the big mosquitoes.
Oh my goodness. Like, if it's 40 degrees, I think it's freezing in here. But then, you know, going up to Green Bay, when it's like, it's, you know, as is tradition of them having a snow game.
You warmed up by the light of the fire in your paycheck. So.
Now? Well, hey, listen. Hey, playing a game at Lambeau would be awesome.
League minimum's still pretty good, the NFL.
All right. Real quick, Brad, I've got to ask you. Your most favorite play you were ever a part of in the NFL? One that's the most memorable?
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl?
Field goal in the Super Bowl.
Field goal right there. Was it just surreal going out there?
It's just everything in kind of moment and during the game, the atmosphere is just Super Bowl.
Yeah, I know. That's something that none of us will be able to experience. I'm glad you got to do it. Brett Goode, really appreciate you coming in, man. Thanks it was great, great to have you. For everybody here on the Morning Rush, for Tommy Kraft and Matty T, I am John Neighbors. We'll be after it again tomorrow. We're going to have a full show for you on that Wednesday. Have some fun with it as well. Same sports show, same sports channel tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you then.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.